that, I am going to get ready to kick off today's webinar, and I believe we have some opening remarks from Charlotte Bertrand, who is the Office Director in the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office. So while I queue up Charlotte here, I will again officially welcome you all to today's webinar and get started with just a few opening remarks from Charlotte.
Good afternoon. My name is Charlotte Bertrand, and I am the Director of the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office at the Environmental Protection Agency. We are happy to be showcasing today a training module that was prepared by the Interagency Workgroup of the Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Defense, Department of Interior, and Department of Energy on five-year reviews. This training module is a tool to help improve the federal agency site manager's understanding of what information and data are needed to determine whether a remedy remains protective of human health and the environment. This training module and the other tools that the interagency workgroup developed came from input we heard from stakeholders at the Federal Facility Cleanup Dialogue meetings in 2010 and 2011. We recognize that in order for communities to better understand whether remedies remain protective, the five-year review reports must be written so that the protectiveness determination is concise and understandable. CERCLA and the National Contingency Plan require the lead agency to review remedies at least every 5 years where hazardous substances, pollutants, and contaminants have been left in place, and to report on whether the remedial action remains protective of human health and the environment. I want to take a moment to thank the staff from the Department of Defense and its components, Army, Air Force, and the Navy, the Department of Energy, and the Department of Interior, and staff from the Environmental Protection Agency. Since 2011, workgroup members have worked collaboratively and have developed multiple tools, including the training presented today, that I believe are improving the five-year review process and reports. Thank you for participating in today's webinar.
Okay, with that, let's go ahead and turn things over to Monica McEady, who will help start today's presentation. Monica?
Thank you, Jane, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Monica McEady, and I am the point of contact on federal facilities five-year reviews within the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office at the Environmental Protection Agency. Today's webinar is entitled CERCLA Five-Year Review Training, a Guide for Writers and Reviewers at Federal Facilities. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, in collaboration with the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the U.S. Department of the Interior, developed this presentation to provide writers of five-year reviews at federal facilities with the tools and knowledge needed to avoid common pitfalls and produce streamlined, informative, and accurate reports. The five-year review interagency workgroup was formed to help improve and standardize the federal facility five-year review process. Again, the purpose of this training is to help streamline the five-year review process, promote consistency across agencies, and help writers understand and address the most common issues that reviewers find in five-year review reports. Some of the best management practices in the training may apply to Superfund private sites. Therefore, this module could be useful for EPA remedial project managers that manage private Superfund sites. For federal facility sites, the report writer is either the lead federal agency project manager or a contractor for the lead federal agency. The reviewer of the report may be EPA and state regulators. Throughout the document, we may use the word you. You refers to the federal agency project manager or their contractor who's responsible for writing the report. When we refer to you as the reviewer of the draft document, we're talking about EPA or the state project manager and their contractor. Moving on to the next page. So this training can help, of course, as we said before, write shorter, more focused reports submit easily reviewed reports with field comments, and also write to a broad audience. The information in this training does not substitute for the 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance or other supplementary or policy clarifications. The training module reflects the experience from EPA and federal agency site managers implementing the five-year review process at federal facility sites. This training module should be used as a resource to assist the writers and reviewers of federal facility five-year review reports. This training will address the most challenging aspects of conducting and writing a five-year review to help you write short, easily reviewed reports in a manner that follows the EPA 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance. This module will also provide guidance on how to choose and support a protectiveness statement and where to find the resources needed to stay up to date on recent five-year review supplements. In this training, SITE refers to the National Priorities Listing, or NPL SITE. An operable unit, which is OU, refers to a portion of the SITE. Many documents in this training may reference the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, which was called OSWER. In January 2016, OSWER changed its name to the Office of Land and Emergency Response. This guidance and policies that reference OSWER are still applicable. Next slide. Training overview. So in this training, we will discuss a few areas, the five-year review purpose in the regulatory context, preparing the five-year review, collecting data, assessing protectiveness, writing the five-year review report, and EPA submission and review process. Next slide. The five-year review purpose and regulatory context. Moving on to the next slide. Again, this training is a tool to help improve your understanding of the information and data needed to support a protectiveness statement. Let's start by reviewing why we conduct five-year reviews and document the findings in a report. So the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, called CERCLA, and the National Contingency Plan, NCP, require that the lead agency review remedial actions at sites that do not allow for unlimited use, unrestricted exposure, which is identified as UUUE, at least once every 5 years. The lead agency documents the findings of the review in the five-year review report, which is submitted to and reviewed by EPA and the states. Next slide. The next two slides list comments made by EPA reviewers of federal facility five-year reviews. The top five comments are related to protectiveness statements. Again, the purpose of the five-year review is to assess the protectiveness of the remedy. Therefore, assessing and choosing and supporting and writing protectiveness statements correctly is the main focus for the reviewers of the five-year review report. So The first common comment that comes out is that one is that there should be one protectiveness statement for every OU evaluated during the review. Second, a protectiveness statement is not always needed if certain criteria are met, such as the operable unit or OU where remedial action has not begun or there is no record of decision or an OU has reached UUUE in the last five-year review and remains UUUE. Third, OU still under construction need a protective statement, and that protective statement is generally written as will be protective. Fourth, protective statements should be consistent with the 2001 five-year review guidance and the 2012 memorandum. Five-year review writers often sometimes choose the wrong protectiveness statement. Decision logic for choosing protectiveness statements will be discussed later in this training. Fifth, once a site achieves construction completion, a site-wide protectiveness statement is issued. A site-wide protectiveness determination is required and will generally be the same protectiveness determination as the least protective operable unit at that site. Next slide. Other comments from EPA. Six is one of the things with the report should stay focused on the protectiveness message. One of the things that we recommend is that you distill the messages from other documents such as operation and maintenance and long-term monitoring reports. But again, synthesize the information and stay focused on the protectiveness message. Seventh, the report needs to provide adequate rationale for the protectiveness statement. A remedial action should address one or more remedial action objectives, which is identified as remedial action RAOs, and a technical evaluation should provide evidence that the remedial action is functioning as intended and meeting the RAOs. Eighth, the technical evaluation must address the RAOs or risk basis of the ROD. Ninth, the progress since the last five-year review section should include adequate information about the status of issues being tracked since the last five-year review. And the last one, 10th. For five-year reviews for federal facilities, EPA only tracks those issues that affect current and future protectiveness. Keeping these comments in mind will help you develop a streamlined report that are easy to read and review. Moving on to the next slide. Before starting the five-year review, again, we have provided some reference materials here, some resources on websites. One is the FFO Federal Facility five-year review website, and the other one is the OSREDI Superfund five-year review site. We encourage the writer should use the OSRA 2001 Comprehensive five-year review Guidance as a guide throughout the five-year review process. So since 2001, EPA has also issued several updates and supplemental guidance. These supplements offer helpful guidance for addressing issues and concerns. When starting a five-year review, the lead federal agency project manager should contact the state RPM and the technical specialist in their agency to stay up to date on emerging contaminants, exposure pathways, and state and federal standards. Also, be sure to check original sources such as the Integrated Risk Information System and relevant state websites. Early on, the five-year review team should identify any new or changed regulation and seek agreement on whether they impact the remedial action objectives or the protectiveness of the remedy. Next slide. Next slide identifies other agency links. And those, if you click on those will take you to those links. We have identified the Navy Toolkit, the Army Corps of Engineers five-year review, a military munitions, and also Department of Energy Long-Term Stewardship Resource Center. Now I would like to turn the presentation over to Donna Caldwell from the Department of Navy.
Thank you, Monica. I'm Donna Caldwell with Naval Facilities Engineering Command. And this next section, we're going to talk about preparing to write the five-year review report. We'll walk through some of the most important steps that lead agency project managers should consider when preparing to write the five-year review report. Okay, it's not changing slides. Why is that?
I can do it, Monica.
There we go. I got it. So first, we have to assemble a five-year review team. The level of assistance and expertise needed to conduct the review will vary for each site and installation. As discussed in the EPA's 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance, potential members of an integrated project team can include technical experts such as hydrogeologists, engineers, risk assessors, an institutional or land use control coordinator, legal counsel, site community liaison, federal, state, and tribal representatives, and even realty specialists and land trustees. Lead agency project managers should engage the integrated project team early in the review process and encourage regular communication between team members. This allows for real-time input from environmental regulators, legal representatives, and others, and helps to identify and address issues proactively instead of waiting until later in the review process. You also need to develop a schedule. As discussed in the EPA 5-year review guidance, you should prepare a schedule to help plan, track, and manage the activities necessary to conduct, write, and submit the 5-year review report. For federal facility sites, at a minimum, you should begin planning 3 years in advance of the statutory deadline to ensure you can secure the funding and contract support you may need to complete the review process. Make sure your contractor's contract will not expire before completing the 5-year review. You should begin data collection and report writing at least 12 to 18 months ahead of the due date. You can adjust this timeline depending on the size and complexity of your site, whether you elect to have public meetings or comment periods, and any changes in site conditions that may cause delays in the review process. You should also reach out to EPA and state project managers to establish a date for submittal of the 5-year review report. Early agreement with reviewers on the review schedule, the scope of the 5-year review, and key issues will allow EPA and state regulators and other reviewers the time to review the draft report and resolve issues prior to the review's statutory deadline. This table shows that not all operable units need to be evaluated during the 5-year review process. A decision document should be in place and a remedial action initiated within the operable unit that leaves waste in place. If the operable unit has no decision document, such as a record of decision, action memorandum, record decision, or equivalent, then a remedy has not been selected and an evaluation is not required. If a remedial action start has not yet occurred at the MPL site requiring a statutory review, a review is not required. If the criteria for review have been met anywhere in the operable unit, an evaluation should take place and a protectiveness statement issued. Where there are operable unit sub-areas suitable for unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, they can be carved out of those evaluations. Unlimited use and unrestricted exposure means the selected remedy will place no restrictions on the potential use of the land or other resources. Unless the OU meets UUUE criteria, it should be evaluated once the trigger for evaluation is met. If an operable unit is not UUUE at the time the ROD or decision document, an evaluation should take place and a protectiveness statement issued. Now, the first 5-year review report after an operable unit meets unlimited use and unrestricted exposure conditions should include an evaluation that supports and demonstrates UUUE and include a protectiveness statement for that operable unit. The report should state that this is the last time the operable unit will be evaluated in the 5-year review. The operable unit would not be part of future evaluations unless toxicity or other factors affecting UUUE are no longer valid. Discretionary evaluations may be performed at operable units where they are not required by CERCLA statute or policy. These are performed at the discretion of the lead federal agency, for example, where a 5-year review is required under a RCRA corrective action. No further action and no further remedial action plan does not necessarily mean unlimited use and unrestricted exposure if waste is left in place. Operable units deleted from the national priorities list will still need evaluation if they are not unlimited use and unrestricted exposure. Now, this ROD summary table is an example of a planning tool that the lead agency project manager can use as a starting point and scoping tool for the 5-year review process. The table identifies that operable units will be evaluated to meet statutory requirements under CERCLA. Developing a table like this helps frame the 5-year review discussions by allowing team members to identify the data and documents they will need to assess and determine protectiveness. For example, the team can discuss the tables and maps needed to support protectiveness statements, considering each remedial action objective and remedy listed in the table. The team should also discuss which operable units are to be evaluated as part of the 5-year review, identify data gaps, people to interview, and other relevant sources of information. The table is organized by operable unit. It lists the lead agency's designation and common name for the operable unit. The table includes record of decision dates, remedial action objectives, and identifies the remedies. The exposure pathways of the remedial action objectives are also apparent. However, contaminants are not listed in this example. A column of contaminants in soil or numeric restoration goals could be added to the table for completeness. Unevaluated operable units. If a remedy has not been selected for an operable unit, or it has been determined that the operable unit meets unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, the protectiveness of the remedy should not be evaluated, and a protectiveness determination is not required in the five-year review report. The team can use this table to identify operable units at the facility that do not require evaluation in the five-year review report for completeness. Okay. This next section, collecting data for the five-year review evaluation. Remedy assessment involves reviewing relevant documents and data. Examples of documents to review include remedy decision documents, such as your records of decision, ROD amendments, explanations of significant difference, implementation documents, such as remedial action reports, remedy performance documents, such as inspection reports, operation and maintenance reports, institutional control instruments, such as restrictive covenants, and documents implementing land use controls, legal documents such as deed notices or federal facility agreements, optimization reports, and community involvement plans are all potential documents to review as part of the five-year review process. Every site is different, so the documents you may need to review will vary. Appendix B in EPA's five-year review guidance provides a more complete list of potential documents to be reviewed during the five-year review process. Reviewing remedy performance documents such as groundwater monitoring reports helps identify data trends that assist in determining whether a remedial action has achieved remedial action objectives or is expected to achieve remedial action objectives. To simplify the five-year review report, synthesize key information from existing documentation such as decision documents, remedial design documents, monitoring reports, and closeout reports. Key data and findings should be distilled and the sources of more detailed information cited in the five-year review report. Writers should avoid cutting and pasting multiple pages of text. Instead, consider providing links to these documents to cite that more in-depth, detailed information. The five-year review site inspection should be conducted by an objective party, someone without bias or preconceived views or conclusions about the remedy and conditions at the site. They should take place no more than 9 months before the expected signature date of the five-year review report. The lead federal project manager should ask state and EPA representatives if they would like to be present for the site inspection. You can use site inspection checklists, as in Appendix D of the EPA five-year review guidance, or other agency or site-specific checklists as a guide when conducting the site inspection. Since site inspections are conducted to visually confirm the document and document site conditions, taking photographs during the site inspection works very well. The site inspection is also a good time to evaluate site institutional controls and land use controls. The site inspection form in the five-year review guidance includes an institutional control evaluation form. Many sites also have annual reviews of institutional controls. These reports and other inspections may substitute for this part of the site inspection. Community engagement is an important part of CERCLA. The lead federal agency project manager should work with site community liaison on a communication strategy and notify the community about the five-year review before it begins and again when it finishes. A public notice in a local newspaper is the most common way to notify the community that you are preparing to conduct a five-year review at a nearby federal facility. You can also use your facility's installation webpage and local radio or TV stations to announce the five-year review. If your site has an active community group, you should notify the public at its next meeting. In 2015, EPA added language to the National Contingency Plan to broaden the methods by which EPA can notify the public about certain Superfund activities. Community members may be interviewed as part of the five-year review remedy assessment. Conduct community interviews with plenty of lead time. Incorporate existing public opinions already provided on remedy performance issues from ongoing public outreach efforts. Focus community input on assessing remedy protectiveness, not reopening the remedy decision. Because community members live near these sites, they can offer valuable input about the day-to-day realities at the site and play an important role in the long-term stewardship of federal facilities. Adjacent property owners or owners of off-site property that may be affected by contamination can be especially helpful to interview. Also, local government officials may need to be interviewed to determine and ensure if institutional controls are implemented properly. The five-year review interagency work group recently developed a set of five-year review community tools, including videos and fact sheet templates, to help site managers at federal facilities explain the purpose and findings of a five-year review to surrounding communities. Community meetings are a great platform for sharing the short video and training module. Once you have completed the review, the fact sheet template can help you organize and summarize the most important five-year review findings and share them with the community. The fact sheet can also be distributed at your community meetings. These tools are all available on the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office five-year review webpage. More information is also available in EPA's 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance in Appendix A. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Trish O'Connor with the Department of Energy.
Yes, hello, hi, this is Trish O'Connor. I'm with the Department of Energy's Office of Environmental Management. And we're going to talk about how to assess protectiveness in your five-year review. The critical information pathway emphasizes the protectiveness statement that should run through the five-year review report. And that goes from the remedial action objectives through the technical assessment that Donna Caldwell just explained to the protectiveness statement. And this is not specified in the five-year review guidance, but it's a best practice to help focus the message and to ensure that your technical assessment and five-year review report are concise and streamlined. The remedial action objectives are the first step in the critical information path. The site's RAOs come from the decision documents, and they should already include the risk drivers, which include the media, the contaminants of concern, the pathways of contaminants, and potential receptors, and also the land use, both current and future projected, as well as the purpose of the action, which may include preventing exposure, minimizing the migration of contamination, or eliminating the contamination and restoring the media for beneficial reuse. You have to, on the technical evaluation, you need to think first about what your remedial action objectives are in order to answer the three questions for your technical evaluation of protectiveness. Question A asks if the remedy is functioning as intended by site decision documents, it's important to consider all the remedial action objectives when you're conducting and writing the technical evaluation. Question B asks if the exposure assumptions, toxicity data, cleanup levels, and RAOs used at the time of remedy selection are still valid. You'll need to consider changes in toxicity values and land use to answer question B. Some of the resources that you'll want to consider checking into would be the EPA regional screening level website as a screening tool, having a risk assessment expert on your five-year review team, visiting EPA's FIPRO website for updates on new and emerging contaminants, consulting the Integrated Risk Information System on EPA's website to stay up to date on the toxicity changes, and to involve the state regulator in terms of their ability to check to see if there are any state standards that you need to be concerned with. Changes in standards or land use should be viewed in light of the protectiveness determination and whether existing REOs, if achieved, will be protective. A change by itself does not trigger a change in protectiveness. You must consider whether unacceptable risk, a new exposure pathway, or other changed circumstances are present. Question C asks if there's any other information that came to light that could call into question the protectiveness of the remedy. Examples might include a flood, an earthquake, a wildfire, something along those lines where it could affect the protectiveness of the remedy. The remedial action objectives will determine the appropriate data needed to support a protectiveness statement. As a reminder, an RAO may have several remedial actions associated with it. As an example, the evaluation of remedy performance metrics and monitoring data should indicate whether it's likely that the RAOs and the cleanup levels could be achieved in a reasonable time frame with existing remedial systems. If contaminant concentrations are decreasing in a timely manner and other progress performance metrics are being achieved, it's likely that the remedial approach is functioning as intended and that the remedy is likely to achieve RAOs and cleanup levels in a reasonable time frame, as was selected in the ROD. EPA expects to return usable groundwater to their beneficial use whenever practicable within a time frame that's reasonable given the particular circumstances of the site. If the remedy is not meeting or may not be able to meet the RAOs or performance metrics as expected, then this may indicate a need for a remedy action optimization review and or a reevaluation of the existing remedy. The use of maps, graphs, and tables is an effective way to maintain focus on the protectiveness statement and tell the story of the technical evaluation. This illustration, this map, is from the Navy Toolkit for preparing fiber reviews, and I highly recommend you go and check those out because there's lots of good examples there. And in this example, you're using ICs to prevent exposure to groundwater contamination that exceeds maximum contaminant levels. And this map shows the plume extent on the left and the IC boundary to support the protectiveness statement. And it ties these elements together in a concise, focused map. And showing the before and after success a pump and treat is also very helpful. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit in a couple of slides about the risk assessment considerations for the technical assessment. The risk evaluations that support the selected remedy are based on exposure assumptions. Changes in site conditions, ARRs, toxicity values, or risk assessment methodology may not always make the remedy not protective. Protectiveness may remain unchanged if a toxicity change results in risk within the acceptable risk range or if an exposure pathway remains incomplete. Other risk assessment considerations. There's a broad spectrum of changes in physical conditions that can impact protectiveness over time. There may be a new building not previously evaluated that may require a vapor intrusion evaluation. There could be changes to the zoning from commercial industrial to residential or mixed use that may require risk to be revisited. Contamination migration may require additional risk analysis because contamination has reached a potable well. Evidence may indicate that land use controls are not effectively preventing trespassing or recreational exposure. Some changes in toxicity values may impact protectiveness. For example, a chemical requires evaluation as a non-carcinogen when previously in the ROD only cancer risk was evaluated. An example for that is trichloroethylene or dioxin. Toxicity values may become more stringent, requiring analysis to determine if the change would affect protectiveness and require revisions to the selected remedy. Examples there may be TCE, dioxin, or PCBs. More stringent toxicity values or standards may now be available for chemicals that were previously not selected for remediation. An example there would be arsenic, and for which evaluation may be needed to determine protectiveness. So, for example, on arsenic, the MCL, the maximum contaminant level, has changed from 50 part per billion to 10. And the selective remedy may have connected residents to an alternative water supply if their wells were greater than 50 part per billion. The remedy may need to be updated to address residents with wells that have arsenic greater than 10, but less than 50 part per billion. Okay, when you get to writing your five-year review, we're going to talk about a couple of areas for your assessment. The five-year review guidance asks for specific information for each issue and recommendation in the five-year review report. It includes these two tables to present the information in the issues and recommendations in the follow-up action section. EPA tracks the information, and the EPA RPM will revisit this information with the lead agency between five-year reviews. So go ahead, use these tables to present the issues, recommendations, and follow-up actions that affect current and future protectiveness. The example in this table indicates that while there's no current exposure and no domestic wells, future land use changes may lead to well installation. So you organize the issues and the recommendations by operable unit and include a planned milestone date for the recommendations. Each issue should be associated with a specific recommendation, and each recommendation should be associated with a specific issue. Issues that do not affect current or future protectiveness can be mentioned in the body of the five-year review report, but don't include them in the table. The table is here for what needs to be followed up on. Okay, now we're going to go ahead and run through the various types of protectiveness statements. And this, the first protectiveness statement would be protective. This is used when the answers to the technical assessment, questions A, B, and C, provide sufficient data and documentation to conclude that the remedy is functioning as intended and all human and ecological risks are currently under control and are anticipated to be under control in the future. The second one is protective in the short term. This is used when the technical assessment provides sufficient data and documentation to conclude that exposures are currently under control and no unacceptable risks are occurring. However, the data and/or documentation review also raises issues that could impact future protectiveness or remedy performance. Will be protective is a statement used when the remedy is under construction and the technical assessment provides sufficient data and documentation to conclude that exposures are currently under control and no unacceptable risks are occurring in the areas. In addition, the answers to questions A, B, and C also indicate that the remedy under construction is anticipated to be protective upon completion and no remedy implementation or performance issues have been identified. Protectiveness deferred is used as a statement when the information available to questions A, B, and C of the technical assessment does not provide sufficient data or documentation to conclude that all the risks are currently under control and no unacceptable exposures are occurring. When a protectiveness deferred determination is made, the issues and the recommendations and the protectiveness statement generally discuss the actions that are needed to collect the missing information and the time frame anticipated to complete these actions. Once the actions have been completed, a 5-year review addendum is filed. A template for this addendum is available on EPA's 5-year review website. A protectiveness determination of not protective is used when the technical assessment provides adequate data and documentation to conclude that the risks are not currently under control and that follow-up actions are required. And one last thing. A site-wide protectiveness statement is required when a site is completed putting all of its remedial actions in place. And this site-wide protectiveness statement reflects the least protected protectiveness statement. And this last slide talks about the anatomy of protecting the statement. In this example, the remedy is protective in the short term because land use controls prevent people from drinking the contaminated groundwater. However, the report recommends that the IC boundary be extended to ensure long-term protectiveness. In black, the protecting the statement begins by specifying the OU and how it is protective in the short term. Then in blue, the statement explains why the remedy is currently protective. And then lastly in red, the last sentence states that what must happen for the remedy to be considered fully protective. Protecting the statement should be included in the 5-year review report's executive summary and the body of the text. EPA issued guidance in September of 2012 clarifying the use of protectiveness determinations for CERCLA 5-year reviews. This guide provides boilerplate language to be used when drafting a protectiveness statement. The reviewer, EPA and state, will check that the protectiveness statement follows the wording in the September 2012 guidance. So I recommend you follow the standard format there. It'll help promote consistency. And this, too, is available at EPA's 5-year review website. And now we're going to move on to writing the 5-year review.
Hi, this is Vanessa Musgrave. And, Jean, I have to tell you, I've lost my Internet connection.
Okay.
So I'm going to – I will just ask you to – whenever I need to have a slide change, I'll just – say so.
Okay.
I'm Vanessa Musgrave. I'm with the Army Environmental Command, which is part of the Installation Management Command. We're located at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas. The next step that we need to talk about is writing the 5-year review report after you have done all this data analysis. Next slide. The first thing that you need to consider before you start to write is who your audience is. When writing the 5-year review report, keep this information pyramid in mind. Each level of the pyramid should contain less detail than the level below it. The report can speak to a broader audience if the more technical information is distilled into plain language relating to remedial action objectives and protectiveness. The five-year review should be a logical summary of the documents, data, and information in the report appendix and the existing site file and administrative record. In a moment, we will discuss ways to streamline the report. Executive summaries and fact sheets are not required. However, they are highly recommended for five-year reviews that are long or complicated or have an audience that would benefit from a distillation of the information. The executive summary and the fact sheet should summarize the five-year review's most important findings. Remember that the audience for the executive summary and the fact sheet will be broad, so adjust your writing style as needed and limit the use of acronyms and technical terminology. We will discuss tips for writing a successful executive summary later in the training. Next slide, please. One of the ways to focus and synthesize information and streamline your reports include actions such as using hyperlinks that can link to the information and data in other sections of the five-year review or other resources or references. Avoid including information that does not affect protectiveness and can obscure the messages about protectiveness. For example, instead of repeating detailed information from an O&M report or from a long-term monitoring report, distill the messages as they relate to the remedial action objectives and protectiveness. Summarize the main points in the five-year review and then cite and link to those supporting resources. We also suggest that you include tables, graphs, maps, and diagrams as much as reasonable to share key information and then use the text to connect these visual elements. The goal is to make sure the protectiveness statements in your reports are focused, accurate, concise, and well-positioned for review. Next slide, please. So now let's think about how to present or frame the issues that you might have found in your analysis. When do you have an issue? If the operable unit will not meet your remedial action objectives, then there may be issues that need to be addressed. Second, when is an issue not framed well, or how do you properly frame an issue? An issue should be solvable by implementing a recommendation in a reasonable time frame or a short time frame, such as several years. Continued monitoring, a statement that says, for example, continued monitoring might not be the best recommendation, but a specialized monitoring recommendation might be better. Thirdly, what aspects of O&M are not issues? Remember that O&M and long-term monitoring plans can be considered part of the remedy. For example, if you find that signs are missing and fences are in disrepair during a site inspection, there may not be an issue unless the O&M or long-term management plan is not keeping the remedy protective or is not being followed. The O&M or LTM plan may need updating or enforcing. Next slide, please. The key to a five-year review is to have a defensible and clear protectiveness statement and determination. So if this flowchart, this protectiveness flowchart, and Exhibit 4-6 in EPA's 2001 guidance can help you choose the correct protectiveness statement based on the answers you developed for questions A, B, and C in the technical assessment discussed earlier. Be sure to answer the flowchart decision questions in the technical evaluation section of your report. Also, it's helpful in choosing the correct protectiveness statement by referring to EPA's 2012 clarifying memorandum on the use of protectiveness determinations. Now let's consider a couple of elements of this chart. The blue box asks about trigger questions. So you might want to ask yourself these three things. Do you have a record of decision, a ROD? for statutory review, has the first remedial action begun? For policy reviews, which are rarely done at federal facility sites, is the construction completed? And third, is the operable unit suitable for unrestricted use and, unrestricted exposure and unlimited use? If the OU was not at UUUE at the time of the ROD, then issue a protectiveness statement the first time that the operable unit reaches UUUE. Some other important questions, if you look at the green boxes on the slide. Is the remedy under construction, or is the remedy operating or completed? This question generally applies to the engineering controls and not the institutional controls. Is there enough information to support a protectiveness statement and confirm that there are no exposures, or must additional data be gathered? The answer to all these questions will guide you through the chart to a good protectiveness determination. For example, if vapor intrusion testing has not been performed above a TCE plume, and there are no exposures, the rider may choose short-term protectiveness. If there is not enough information to confirm whether or not there are any exposures, the rider may choose protectiveness deferred. Another example is if your institutional controls are not yet fully implemented and there are no exposures, then the remedy could be short-term protective. It's important to remember that for remedy is operating or completed if there is no exposure and the land use controls or institutional controls are not fully implemented, then the remedy could be short-term protectiveness. The reviewer will check that your protectiveness statement follows wording in the September 2012 EPA memorandum, which recommends language for drafting protectiveness statements and the thought process outlined in the 2001 guidance. Following a standard format helps to promote five-year review consistency across federal agencies. Also, remember to issue one protectiveness statement for each operable unit assessed in the five-year review. Provide adequate support for the rationale of the protectiveness statement by answering the questions in the decision points on the flowchart. Use tables and figures to display data. You can also cite and link to supporting reports and resources. Could I have the next slide? Now let's think about what the reviewer would look for in a protectiveness statement. The reviewer will look to see first if is there one protectiveness statement per operable unit. Second, they will examine whether the rider selected the appropriate protectiveness statement. Third, does the technical assessment sufficiently support the protectiveness statement? Fourth, is the protectiveness statement for each operable unit consistent with the issues and recommendations found in the body of the review? This also applies if there's a site-wide protectiveness statement. Fifth, does the protectiveness statement consider the site remedial action objectives? For example, does it evaluate protectiveness in light of the stated remedial objective, such as to contain, cover, or remove contaminants of concern? Sixth, does the protectiveness statement follow the format in the 2001 guidance and the 2012 policy memo on clarifying protectiveness determinations? And last, is the site-wide protectiveness statement included in the five-year review if a site is construction complete? And next slide. Finally, you must be writing the you might be writing an executive summary. The purpose of an executive summary is to summarize the five-year review's most important findings. Its main focus should be on the protectiveness determinations and any known remedy issues or uncertainties that may affect protectiveness. Five-year review readers look to summary documents, such as the executive summary or a fact sheet, for a quick synopsis of key facts from the full report. So when writing an executive summary, avoid reiterating complex statements made in the main report. Instead, succinctly inform readers of the five-year review results and clearly list the protectiveness statements. One way to make the information accessible to a broad audience is to use plain language and avoid using acronyms or complex technical terms. Remember that five-year review readers may be a very broad audience. You may also use the new five-year review executive summary template and the community fact sheet template as a starting point to help you organize and summarize your full report into easy-to-understand documents for the public. And now I would like to bring the presentation back to Monica at EPA.
All right. Thanks, Vanessa. Thanks very much. Now we're going to move on and talk about EPA submission and review process. So let's kind of discuss what happens when a five-year review report, after you've written it, you've asked the regulators to review it. Let's walk through the steps that EPA reviewers take after the lead agency has submitted the report. And I want to, the next slide, please. The next slide talks about the 2011 EPA Program Priority Memorandum, which was actually located on the EPA website. And in August of 2011, EPA issued the Program Priority Memo to help EPA RPMs improve the timeliness of the five-year review process and follow through on issues at federal facility sites. Being aware of this policy can help you understand EPA RPMs process as they review and submit comments on five-year review reports. The policy provides guidance to EPA RPMs regarding concurrence and non-concurrence on protecting the statements. Writing the concurrence and non-concurrence letters, how do you track and update the issues and recommendations that affect protectiveness, identifying when the next five-year review is due and to generate those due dates. And then also it guarantees that the five-year reviews are completed at least once every 5 years. So again, we want to point that to you that you should review that 2011 EPA program policy memorandum. Next slide. So the next slide talks about EPA review and submission process. And just want to bring it to folks' attention that this cycle can occur maybe more than once. And as we mentioned before, the lead federal agency submits the draft report to the regulatory agencies for comment. The amount of review time is usually based on the site's federal facility agreements. Generally, regulatory agencies will have 60 days to review and submit comments. And then another 45 to 60 days is generally allowed for the final review, depending on the terms of documents reviewed under the FFA. During this review time, the first review time, EPA RPM will solicit comments from the technical, legal, and headquarters staff. These comments will then be consolidated and sent to the lead federal agency. The lead federal agency will usually respond and incorporate those comments, or there will be some time for discussion. The EPA RPM will review the final draft and submit any comments to the lead federal agency. Once all comments are addressed, the document will be finalized by the lead federal agency and circulated at the lead agency for signature. Depending on the signatory authority, EPA may need to sign the report and or write a concurrence letter regarding the protectors' determination. Again, in the concurrence letter, EPA will concur or non-concur on a protectors' statement for each operable unit, identify the issues that will be tracked in our database called SEMS, and state the due date for the next review based on the statutory requirements of a five-year review that is due no less than once every 5 years. If the federal agency and EPA cannot agree on the protectiveness of the remedy, EPA may issue an independent finding of the protectiveness of the remedy, and that independent finding should be written in a letter to the federal agency. For complex sites with multiple OUs, Obtaining signatures may take many months. So one of the things that we advise folks to do is develop a schedule, an agreed upon schedule, and by the reviewers during the planning stage may ensure that the draft reports are keyed into the final 5-year review report deadline. Next slide. Our next slide talks about accountability. And after the EPA region signs the concurrence, or what we call a non-concurrence or independent finding of protectiveness, the EPRPM has 5 days to submit the data into the EPA tracking system called SIMS. The RPM then sends an electronic copy of the 5-year review report to headquarters, where it's actually posted on the EPA website. EPA submits an annual report to Congress that includes a protective statement for each site due that fiscal year. EPA also reports on whether the agency whether EPA has made an independent finding of the protectiveness of the remedy in that report. Next slide. So, one of the things we wanted to talk about was the following up on recommendations between 5-year reviews. So EPA monitors the progress being made on recommendations between 5-year reviews. EPA updates our database, Superfund database called SIMS, periodically and when milestones are met. There are 5 possible status statements in SIMS for updating each recommendation between 5-year reviews. One is under discussion, where actual work has not yet begun. Ongoing is where actual work is in progress. Considered and not implemented. An action has been completed or has been addressed and will be addressed rather in the next 5-year review. Documentation should be included in the site file to support each update. For example, a copy of a local ordinance, a completion report, or an email correspondence can document that an issue has been resolved. The documentation should provide some evidence of the date of completion. And again, this information will be reported in the progress since the last 5-year review section of the 5-year review report. Issues and recommendations from the reports can also be discussed in the site's annual work plan or the site management plan. Next slide, please. So, conclusions. First of all, the work group, we want to emphasize the work group products that we've talked about today augments the 2001 comprehensive 5-year review guidance, and it provides a basis for writing clearer and more concise 5-year review reports. One of the things we want to leave with our audience is, first thing, a reminder is the focus. Make sure all the information in the report supports and relates directly to the protectiveness determination. Again, number 2, identify OUs that will be evaluated in the early planning stages of the 5-year review, and identify those remedial action objectives associated with those OUs. Evaluate protectiveness operable unit by operable unit. 4, issue a protectiveness statement for each operable unit that meets the trigger criteria. 5, again, distilling a message from other reports such as your long-term monitoring report or your O&M or your optimization report. Do not paste lengthy text sections verbatim into these reports. Distill the information. Number 6, use the remedial action objective as the yardstick for technical evaluation. 7, use a flow chart for consistent protective statements. And 8, support the protective statements with maps, graphs, and other information that shows that the remedy performance is related to the remedial action objectives. And then 9, follow the format in the 2001 comprehensive 5-year review guidance and the 2012 OSLA memorandum for writing protectiveness statements. And then 10, add the issues to your next annual work plan so that they can continue to be discussed. Next slide, please. For more information, we've listed out a few websites. Our FIFRO 5-year review website, Superfund 5-year review website, there's IRIS, Assessing Protectiveness, at sites for vapor intrusion. That's also on the Superfund website. Recommended evaluations of ICs and addressing asbestos at Superfund sites. All of these documents are on either are on the Superfund website or the FIFO website. Next slide, please. So we want to, at this point, we hope this presentation will help you as you conduct the review and write the next five-year review at your site. The Federal for Five-Year Review Interagency Workgroup developed this training module as part of an interagency collaboration between, again, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the U.S. Department of Interior. Thank you, and that concludes our presentation.
Okay. Monica, I believe we're going to switch to our Q&A period of this session. And I just wanted to remind participants that they have not yet submitted a question or comment on today's topic. They can enter it into that Q&A window that you should see towards the lower right of your screen. All the submissions in the Q&A window are private. So again, I'll encourage you, if you haven't typed up your question or comment, feel free to do so. If you sent one in already, we do have them queued up. And I believe if it's okay with the speakers, I'll start reading through some of the questions, and we'll try to address what we can today. Monica, is that fair if I get started?
Yes.
Okay. This very first question asks, in terms of the types of sites that this training applies to, one attendee would like to know, does this training apply to non-NPL federal sites?
We would say yes, that this training can apply to non-NPL federal facility sites. And we would also remind folks that the information in this training is actually, again, augments the 2001 five-year review comprehensive document that also applies to non-NPL sites.
Okay. Our next question, what is the difference between a statutory review and a, quote, policy review?
Okay. So I don't know if any of the presenters want to take that question, but I want to, the difference between a statutory and a policy review is defined in the 2001 five-year review guidance. And it starts off on page 1-2. So a statutory review is if the ROD for the site was signed on or after October the 17th, 1986, which is the effective date of SARA, and a remedial action was related, was selected under Circular 121, Section 121. That is a statutory, that is considered a statutory review. And a policy review, our generally five-year reviews, generally should be conducted as a matter of policy for the following types of action. So this includes a pre- or a post-SARA remedial action that upon completion will not leave hazardous substance, pollutants, or contaminants to sites above levels that allow for that term unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, but require 5 years or more to complete. And then it also includes a pre-SARA remedial action that leaves, again, hazardous substance, pollutants, or contaminants on sites above levels that allow for unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, or a policy review can be done as a removal-only site on the NPL where removal action leaves hazardous substance pollutants damage on site above levels that allow for unlimited use and unrestricted exposure and where no remedial action has or will take place. And the difference between the two is also when is a statutory review and when is a policy review, when is a trigger for a statutory review and when is a trigger for a policy review. And again, that all of that information is located in the 2001 five-year review guidance from page 1-2 to 1-5.
Okay, did any of the other presenters want to chime in or add any perspective?
No, I think Monica pulled it right out of the guidance just fine.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on to our very next question. And this one asks, if institutional controls are recorded in the base master plan or real property master plan at a DOD facility, should the five-year review IC inspection include an inspection to confirm that this document exists?
This is Donna. I can take that one. I think that it should. We have land use capable implementation plans at many of our facilities, and it's always a good idea to make sure that they're current and up to date and are readily available for use to ensure that we maintain compliance with all of our institutional controls and land use controls.
Excellent. Thank you. Another participant has asked, where do I find the five-year review guidance? And I believe these things have been highlighted a few times, but perhaps you can just reinforce, if people were looking for the guidance, where would they locate these?
So if people were looking for the guidance, they could go either to the Superfund website, and we've actually, throughout the presentation, we've mentioned the Superfund website, or they can actually go to the FIFRA website.
Okay.
Or you can, or the third is just Google it, and it should pop right up.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Our next question, where is the appropriate place in the five-year review to discuss emerging contaminants?
Do any of you want to take that question?
This is Donna. I'll take it.
Okay.
I don't think that there's any hard and fast rule, but my opinion would be a good place in the technical assessment that brings up when new information comes to light, then you can address the new information as part of an emerging contaminant and how it may or may not influence your existing site and remedies. Anyone else have a different thought on that?
I just wanted, hi, this is Tish O'Connor. I just wanted to say that if it's emerging, it depends on whether or not there's a proposed rule out on it as to whether or not you would consider it to be part of your five-year review.
So this is Monica again. As you know, when you're doing your technical assessments, you're going through a question A, B, and C. And when you're answering to those questions, you're looking at, you know, for question A, you're looking at sometimes if the levels have changed or if there's a new exposure pathway. I think when you're looking at question A is where you should be considering if emerging contaminant has existed. And you should be looking at that and considering that when you do your five-year review technical assessment.
All right. Excellent. Our next question is referencing, I believe, the guidance. And it says that when discussing protectiveness statements, and they reference, or they could be referencing slide number 29 or page 29, the phrase, quote, under control was used often. Does this phrase have an official definition?
Monica, I'm not sure how to answer that except to say there's no risk occurring, and I don't know if there's a specific definition.
Okay, so we would need to go back and look at that question and come up with a response. I don't think there's an official definition of it, but I think we need to go back and look through, and especially the 2001 guidance and any other supplements that have been written to make sure there is no official definition. So I guess I would like to move on to the next question, but try to follow up on that question at a later date.
Okay. I've had a number of participants asking for copies of the presentation materials. and I just wanted to let you know that those are posted as part of the webinar materials, and I'll be sure to share that link with everyone before we close out today. So you can have a copy of the materials, and you can get a list of the websites that the presenters have been referencing, and we'll be sure to share those with all of you before we close out today. I do have another question in the queue here, and this participant asks, are there current examples of how sea level rise or other water changes should be addressed in five-year reviews?
So this is Monica again, and it's also when you're looking, when you're doing your technical assessment and you're looking at questions A, B, and C, some of those questions are actually, or some of those ideas are actually addressed in the guidance when you're reviewing question A, B, and C.
Okay. Does anyone else want to provide any input or any thoughts on that question?
And just as an aside, on a previous question, we just went back and looked at the 2001 guidance. And again, under the technical assessment, under question B, that asks the question, are the exposure assumptions, toxicity data, cleanup levels, and remedial action objectives used at the time of the remedy still valid? There is, it gives you some example, changes in exposure pathway, changes in land use, new contaminants, which deals with emerging contaminants, remedy byproducts, changes in standards, newly promulgated standards in TBC, toxicity, expected progress toward meeting REOs. So all those examples are identified in question B. And again, remember question A, B, and C relate to when you're evaluating the data, evaluating the information to determine the protectiveness, and when you're doing that technical assessment. And also question C talks about ecological, but also talks about natural disaster impacts too. So that's also, you know, the question is related to how, when you're doing the technical assessment.
Okay. I've had another question come in, and there's a couple of people asking about due dates when five-year review should be submitted. And so they just have questions if when a five-year review is submitted or signed, does the five-year clock start from that date, or is there a different date which defines when the next five-year review would be due?
I can take that one for the Navy.
And I can take that for the EPA, too, so go ahead.
The Navy, we have our commanding officers sign our five-year review before EPA signs it. That way we know that our five-year review will meet our statutory deadline because our commander has signed it, and then we submit it to EPA for signature. So because EPA's signature is after the Navy's signature, because technically we consider it when the Navy signs it, and I believe EPA considers it when EPA signs it, so if we sign it first, then we know we're good for the next five-year review and we will not be delinquent.
Yeah, I would speak, this is Vanessa for the Army. I'd say the Army has the same general practice, just to be on the conservative side.
So if we go back, this is Monica again, if we go back and look at when the five-year review is actually triggered, okay, so five-year reviews are triggered for, and if you look on the guidance on page 15, where it's actually the actual RA start date for federal facilities, that is actually the triggering date for five-year reviews, and then it's 5 years after that date. So in our, and what I mentioned to you about our August 2011 memo, it does talk about when actually the due date is. And this is really, and for us at EPA, we are actually tracking those dates and ensuring that those documents are completed by the statutory due date. So our date is based on, in 2011, our date was based on the last date that EPA signed off on the five-year review document. And so if the date was in August of 2011, then the August 5th, 2011, then the next date would be August 5th, 2016. So for EPA, it's based on the date that either EPA either signed off on a report or signed a concurrence letter or either issued its own independent finding of protectiveness.
Okay, excellent. I had another question come in regarding changes or corrections to a five-year review. After a five-year review has been finalized and signed, is there a procedure to amend, update, or correct the five-year reviews if someone notices that something was omitted or needed to be updated, or does it wait until the next five-year review is submitted?
So remember that the five-year review is a snapshot in time. So once the five-year review is actually finalized by the federal agency and the regulatory agency, then that's actually the final document. There, when you, I don't know if it's Tisha or somebody, when you actually defer the protectiveness of the remedy, you do have an opportunity to collect more information and come up with a protectiveness statement. And when you collect that information, you should be actually doing an addendum to that five-year review report. But again, that's only when you defer the protectiveness. So to answer the question, there is, you know, once the five-year review report is completed and signed off by the lead federal agency and the regulator, that is the final report. And there isn't an opportunity to add updates or anything like that.
Okay. A number of participants have asked if there's ever a time when you would include the removal action in a five-year review.
Well, there is. You know, does anyone want to take that question?
I'm not sure I understand the question. So they're saying that the removal action was not a part of the original remedy, but a removal action was taken?
Well, the exact wording was, are there situations where a removal action or interim remedial action should be included in a five-year review?
If the action, Monica, unless you want to take it, if the action was taken before the record of decision, then it just becomes a part of the history of the actions of the site that can be described in the basic history of the site.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, excellent. Let's
remind folks, there are these types of sites where we're doing only removal only, and these are sites are removal only, and those are considered policy reviews. So, again, that is a removal action that takes place at a site on an NPL that leaves hazardous substance pollutants or contaminants on sites above levels that allow for unlimited use or unrestricted exposure, and where there's no remedial action has or will be take place. You can conduct a five-year review as a matter of as a policy. Okay?
Okay.
I'm not sure if that gets to the person's question or whether the person was going down that direction.
Okay. We had another question that was looking for the templates for the executive summary and protectiveness statements. Where would people find those, again, executive summary and protectiveness statement templates that you were discussing today?
Right. So the interagency work group has worked on a template for an executive summary, and that will be found on the FIFO webpage once finalized.
Okay. And then just a couple of participants are looking for clarification about signatures. So some participants are questioning if the documents are actually signed by EPA or if it's more of a concurrence letter. Can you confirm if these documents are being signed or is it a concurrence letter?
So we would ask people to go back and look at your what's called your federal facility agreement and look at what it says in that federal facility agreement for NPL sites. And if it says that EPA signs off on the report, then yes, then EPA should sign off on a report. But if it's silent on that, then what we would be suggesting that EPA folks would be either issuing a concurrence letter, which would mean that they would agree with the federal agency's determination of the protectiveness, or we would be making an independent finding of the protectedness for each, for the operable unit, or for, I'm sorry, for the remedy.
Okay. And we had a question about the performance matrix that you referenced earlier. Where does that matrix appear in the five-year review guidance?
Okay, and I saw, and I saw that question. I think we have to table that question and go back and look and provide a response. I don't have a response at this point.
Okay. All right. Well, I think with that, we'll go ahead and close out our question period today. I'll turn to the presenters and see if there are any final statements that you'd like to share with the audience before we walk through our instructions on accessing resources as well as providing feedback. So, Monica, let me start with you. Any final thoughts you'd like to leave the audience with?
Just to say that we want to thank everyone for participating in today's webinar. I also want to thank the federal agency participants, Donna, Vanessa, and Tish, for volunteering to be a presenter. This was, as we mentioned before, it was an interagency collaboration. We've developed some tools, and some of these tools are already on our website, and we want to encourage site managers and their contractors to use these tools because we believe that they're very good tools and they will help you to write concise and concise and accurate five-year review reports.
All right, thank you. Vanessa, any thoughts you'd like to share before we close?
Yeah, I would just like to stress with folks that you don't need to make this job any harder than it needs to be, and just kind of underline again using tables and charts and graphs and things like that as much as possible. You don't need to, you know, just keep repeating page after page of the, you know, site history and just making it in such a long document that it's difficult, especially after you've done the first one. The second one and others, you can just really get down and focused on the protectiveness determinations, the protectiveness statements, and the information needed to support it so that it can be a good standalone document and you can trace your line of thought all the way through. Just don't make it any harder than you need to.
Thank you. How about, Tish, anything from you?
Yes, I'd like to say thank you to EPA and to DOD for all of this, and it was quite an honor to be here. And I wanted to thank DOE five-year review managers for some of the best practices that are here in this presentation. And I'd also like to tell DOE five-year review project managers to definitely continue to feel free to call me if you have any questions or if you would like to run through some options for any issues you have on five-year reviews. Thank you.
Thank you. And Donna, any final statements from you?
Well, I do want to say thank you to all the federal agencies, and I, too, appreciate the opportunity to share this information with the DOD folks out there and the Navy in particular, of course. I work in the technical support group and encourage all Navy project managers in the restoration program to feel free to send me any questions as they prepare their five-year review. I think one of the things I want to remind folks is that when you are identifying issues as you're doing your five-year review, if it's an issue that doesn't affect protectiveness, it doesn't need to go in the executive summary table that EPA would identify in their database that tracks actions that need to be addressed. You can still have issues and address them, fix a sign, not a big deal, put the right phone number on a sign. But if it affects protectiveness, then that's when we want it up front in the executive summary and in EPA's database to be tracked.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Well, with that, I'll go, yes, the final thought? No? Okay, well then let me go ahead and walk through our final closeout instructions before we conclude today's live broadcast. We had over 350 individuals join us from all over the U.S. for today's session, so I want to send my thanks to those of you who chimed in and joined us for today's session. We do have the presentation materials as well as the websites that were referenced in the slides. Again, the EPA Federal Facility Fiber Review site, as well as the Superfund Fiber Review page, and a number of other links from our other agencies who joined us have been posted. You can find that link on the seminar homepage. You'll see a button to resources or slides. You can click on that and download or open up those websites. I also included them in the Q&A window, and they're right on the screen under related URLs. You can click on seminar resources and press the browse button to open it up. If you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying the recorded version of today's webinar, those links and buttons are still active. You can feel free to browse through those resources. I will ask if you could take just a moment and fill out our very short online feedback form. You'll still find that link, again, on the right side of your screen in the webinar. It's part of the seminar homepage. If you click on the feedback tab, you can fill out a very short online form and let us know what you thought of both the topic as well as the delivery mechanism. The number one question we get is if people can have participation certificates, and if you share feedback, there's a box you can check on that form to request one of those certificates. So if you check the box at the bottom of the form to certify that you were here for the whole session, you'll be able to download or print out one of these participation certificates after you send in your feedback. If you happen to share the line with multiple people, each person can fill out their feedback form on their own and get their own participation certificate. And that goes for those of you replaying the recorded version. You can still follow the link to the feedback form and share your thoughts today. So again, thank you to the agencies who participated, as well as all of those attendees who dialed in from all over the U.S. We did record today's session, and you'll each receive an email as soon as the archive is available for free replay and on-demand playback. A number of you have asked about other questions.